you told me that you were going to turn your life around. In fact, did you just hip check me, Dan?
If journalism,
I do think people deserve to hear directly from you,
is a relentless pursuit of the truth.
Is that a gun in your hand, Gary?
Hey, whoa. Hey, get your hands off me.
You're in my door.
Then silence.
Not really sure why no one wants to talk about it.
Is the enemy.
Hi, Amanda St. Hilaire, Fox 6.
Brian Paulson with Fox 6 News.
This week on Open Record.
Why did you initially attempt to protect her?
Get out of here.
Please leave.
Get off my property.
The art and the ethics.
You better leave me the alone or quit following me.
You're just a piece of and you know it.
You can suck a
Stop trying to take pictures, boy.
Of the unscheduled interview.
Did you really push a woman out of a movie? From the Fox 6 studios, this is Open Record. I'm Brian Polson, and I am joined this week by Open Record's executive producer, Sarah Smith. Hey, Sarah.
Hi.
And we are welcoming back to the podcast Fox 6 investigator Amanda St. Hilaire. Hey, Amanda.
Hey, Brian.
We are recording this episode on Wednesday, March 6th, for release on Thursday, March 7th. You might call that a schedule. In the news business, much of what we do revolves around doing scheduled interviews, where a reporter asks questions and an interviewee shares information, insight, reaction, and sometimes even powerful emotion.
Hopefully.
But not everyone we want to interview for the news wants to be interviewed. This week, we're going to talk about how and why we sometimes resort to showing up anyway and asking the tough questions. We will dive into the art of the unscheduled interview right after this. So if you have watched television news over the last 40 years or more, you've surely seen a few examples of what was once referred to as an ambush interview. A reporter who's flanked by a television news photographer is asking tough questions while a shell-shocked interview subject ducks for cover. It's a technique that took off way back in the 1970s and was very popular among viewers, but earned widespread condemnation, that is, for being unnecessary, unfair, and even potentially defamatory. When I first started, we used to call these confrontation interviews. That was in the late 90s. We'll talk about why even that can be problematic. But today we call them unscheduled interviews. And yes, we still do them. But how and why we do them is different in some very important ways that are important to both fairness and also important to quality journalism. So I know, Sarah, you had a very basic question off the fact that's probably important to establish.
I mean, I was looking through this and I was like, yes, this is all very important. But then I'm like, okay, maybe people don't even really know. When we do schedule interviews, what is that process? Because we don't just get to the part where we run up to people and want answers.
We shouldn't.
So, right. Yeah. That's fair. So what does the scheduled interview look like?
The tip, which I would normally just call an interview.
An interview,
right?
Yeah. Right.
So typically we call someone that we want to talk to. We tell them about a story we're working on. Would you like to be a part of the story? We have some questions and we set up a time and a place. Sometimes we'll start with a phone conversation. Maybe just get comfortable with the subject matter and introducing ourselves and background. And then if they agree, especially in television, we're often trying to convince people or asking them if they want to go on camera. Do you want to talk on television about this issue? And then if they say yes, then we schedule a time and a place to meet. We bring along the camera crew. Everyone knows what's happening. We put microphones on everyone. We sit down and we talk.
And there are different categories of interviewees. So there are groups of people who don't have to be part of the story, but we certainly would like them to be part of the story. So think crime victims, right? They're not obligated to share their trauma with us, but in doing so, if we do it in the right way, it could potentially help other people. There are also people who have more of an obligation to the public. So think people paid with your tax dollars, elected leaders. There is a different approach to setting up those interviews because with some groups, it's kind of a, hey, we'd like you to be part of this. And you have those preliminary conversations. And then with some other groups, it's, hey, the public really needs to hear from you.
And to be clear, we would never, quote unquote, confront or go into an unscheduled interview with a crime victim just because we really wanted to hear their thoughts. Right. The public official has that sort of that standard of expectation that they should be available to speak to their those who have elected them or who pay their salaries. And we're that vehicle for asking those questions.
Brian Paulson, Fox 6. Could I have just a minute to talk to you?
No, really.
I'd like to talk to you about Deputy Joseph Keilis. Is there a reason that you don't want to talk about that incident?
There's something I think that's in between that, though, and that is bad actors or private mm-hmm. citizens who may be accused of or suspected of, or there may be evidence of some sort of wrongdoing. And those are other people who we think owe answers to our viewers. And we might go to extra lengths to try to get those answers. Mm-hmm. It's in the end, it's accountability journalism, someone who needs some level of accountability by answering questions that we don't have the answers to.
So we go through that original process that you described, Brian, and usually it's a combination of phone calls, emails, sure. depending on the situation. Sometimes people agree to an interview and then they back out. Sometimes you don't get any response at all. Sometimes they outright decline the interview. And usually what happens if it's someone in that group where they owe answers to the public, what I try to do and what I know you try to do is be super clear about what happens next. And I've actually had people call on the receiving end of this call this a threat. It's not a threat. It's information. So usually that looks like, hey, I understand you're declining this interview, but just so you're clear, I'd much rather sit down with you at a time that works for you, where we can set up the good lights and have an in-depth conversation. I'm usually upfront about, hey, yeah, I'm going to have some tough questions for you. I also think you deserve the opportunity to answer those. I'd much rather do that than show up with a camera and a microphone at a time that is not of your choosing when you're not prepared to have this conversation.
And we'll talk more about all the reasons why it's actually better for us. We prefer to do the sit-down interview.
Vastly.
But I want to reference what I said in the sort of introduction to this, which is that term ambush interview. We hear that over and over again. And that really comes from back in the sort of 70s, the action news days, and some of the even network news had correspondents and reporters who were known for, they had a reputation for doing the show up unannounced, ask the hard questions, chase the person through the building or whatever it might be, hand in the camera. And that does add drama to a news story. And it is maybe, especially for that time, was so new, it was really exciting and interesting to watch. But the reason the term ambush came up was there was none of that precursor setup.
Mm-hmm. Right.
In many of those cases, there weren't the phone calls requesting. It was the show up and ask the question. Mm-hmm. It was the show up and surprise the person. And one of the most egregious examples of this was a situation where there was there were some chemicals dumped in a parking lot. And I think it might have been a CBS News. I'm not actually sure on the network, so I shouldn't say that. But there's a correspondent who showed up on scene and saw that right next door to these dumped chemicals was a factory. And they went in there and they confronted a person. And that person said, I don't want to talk to you. I don't want to be part of this. We didn't dump those. That was put on the news. They didn't dump those. Mm-hmm. It wasn't their chemicals. There was no fair opportunity to respond, but it sure looked like that person was guilty. And that's why it's so important to distinguish between what an ambush is and what an unscheduled interview is. Because an unscheduled interview is not what we want to do. It is a last resort.
It is truly a last resort. And as you alluded to earlier, Brian, they're deeply inconvenient for us.
You have a good example of that. Yeah.
Deeply inconvenient for us. So I recall one time, and I was doing a story, and actually to back up for a second, pro PR tip, if you want to make a news story less exciting, less interesting, maybe you don't want people to pay attention to the story, just do the freaking interview. Because what happens is if we show up, to your point, that adds drama. So I was doing a story that was more of an issues piece about learning loss during the pandemic, taking a deep dive into what happened to student grades and across multiple school districts. What happened to student performance? Where were some of the students going? And so for each of the school districts, there were 10 of them, we reached out, asked for on-camera interviews. Most did the interviews, and that was their chance to give the explanation behind the numbers. Hey, if our grades drop sharply, here's what we were seeing. Here are the challenges we went through. This isn't like a bad actor kind of story. We had a few school districts for which the superintendents originally declined an interview. We showed up at school board meetings as we warned them we would, and they thought better of it after we showed up. They stood there, they gave us the interview. We had another school district, MPS, we were able to catch the superintendent at a press conference. Wauwatosa School District, vehemently declined any kind of on-the-record interview. And so we showed up. I was 9 months pregnant.
Showed up at a school board meeting.
A school board meeting.
Public meeting.
We warned them we would do. This was 2021, so their meetings were virtual, so the public could access them that way, but the public wasn't allowed in the building. So I caught the, at the time, board president outside the building as he was walking in.
We've been trying to talk to someone from the district about student grades during the pandemic.
I'm sorry, I've got a meeting that starts literally in 5 minutes.
Can we catch you right after?
I can't guarantee that.
Asked him if he would do an interview. He said, no, I'm on my way into a meeting. And I said, great, we'll wait for you after. We waited for hours outside in the car. No bathroom. 9 months pregnant.
That's the piece. Talked about it being deeply inconvenient.
So inconvenient. It's at night.
And you're like, off hours. Yeah, it's not like it's in the middle of the day.
I had a one-year-old at home who no offense to any of the lovely school board members in Wauwatosa School District, I'd much rather spend the time with my kid. And I started having Braxton Hicks contractions. And I was pretty sure they were Braxton Hicks, but I wasn't totally sure.
What I love is that you're going, but I got to stick this out because he's still going to come out. I need to get this interview.
And we'll talk about the importance of waiting in a minute. So he comes out of the building. I continue to ask him questions.
So I haven't seen the data that you're referring to. And without having it in front of me, I can't comment on that.
And then he says something to the effect of, it's been a long day and I'm tired, so I'm going to go home. And that's when I got a little bit punchy and said, look, I'm 9 months pregnant. This is not my idea of a good time, but we have to be here. And the reason we go through the inconvenience, the reason we set that up, by the way, I hate unscheduled interviews.
I'm going to talk about that in a minute.
I hate them. You have to go against human nature to do them because human nature is to connect with the person standing across from you. You're, besides the inconvenience, you are doing something you know is going to upset the other person. You're not getting the answers you want. I want the answers. I want the interview. I relish in being able to ask the questions. So you know you're not going to get all the answers you want. There are certain exceptions. And so it's like, I don't enjoy this, but the reason they are so crucial is because there's an accountability element of it. The public deserves to see how willing or unwilling these public,
especially for public officials, right?
Powerful people, and even if they're not public officials, people in power.
Why did you initially attempt to protect her? I do think people deserve to hear directly from you
how willing or unwilling they are to answer questions. And when you have people who are saying, yeah, I'll talk to you, and then people who are stonewalling you, you can't give them the same kind of credit, because that actually doesn't give people the entire story.
It does convey information to a viewer as to someone's level of transparency,
yes,
comparatively speaking. But there's another piece to this, which is when you ask some of those questions, when you don't expect, maybe in an unscheduled situation, you might only get to ask one or two questions at most. Maybe you'll get to ask more, but it's very easy to hide from and dodge a question. It's very easy to not answer a question that you are not present to be asked.
Mm-hmm.
When the question is asked of you and a camera is on you and you know that viewers will see this, many times these very same people who have said, I'm not going to talk to you, I have nothing to say, will answer the question.
You can turn the camera off if you'd like to speak with me.
No, the camera's going
to
stay on.
Take the night to think about it, because either way you have 3 days. It doesn't have to be done tonight. We talk the next day.
You said either way you have 3 days.
That night I did, yes.
Why would you want a single member here who doesn't want to be here?
I don't think that it's about that, though.
And sometimes those answers are crucial to our understanding and our viewers' understanding of a very important subject.
Well, and in that case, we did get a crucial piece of information, which is that the at the time board president said, I haven't seen the data. So this is someone who is leading a group of people making decisions about the students. And you're telling me that this data, which we were able to get from your school district,
you haven't looked at.
That is something that the public deserves to know. And often, and actually, it was another Wauwatosa school district case, show up at the meeting, again, wait until the end of the meeting. You know, we had gone up to people ahead of the meeting. They said no, they didn't want to answer questions. Well, afterwards, two board members stopped and they did answer our questions and then later did more extensive sit-down interviews. It's easy to write it off and say, well, why show up anyway if they're just not going to answer the questions? That's a big assumption. And in journalism, you know what happens when you assume. We can't make that assumption in the off chance and even the smallest sliver of possibility that we might get those answers. It's our obligation to show up. And especially, I do want to talk about school boards for a second because there's a trend I've been noticing. That, and especially for agencies that have public relations people that your tax dollars pay. Theoretically, that job is then supposed to be to provide the public with information. There are times, and this is no offense to my friends who work in PR, especially in government PR, but there are times when essentially your tax dollars are paying them to stonewall the public from getting that information. And especially with school boards, I've noticed a trend over the last several years where there's this desire for, quote, everyone to be on the same page. And I've seen this reflected in internal emails. Each school board member is an individually elected representative. A government body cannot be treated like a private organization. That actually gets very close to dangerous territory with the law about open meetings and trying to get on the same page behind the scenes. And so when you see people, I'll call it hiding behind one person in public relations to craft a statement that tells you a whole lot of nothing, the public misses out on their individual representative's answer, which may be different than someone else's. So that's why when, especially when we're dealing with boards of people, you'll see us go up to individual people. That's where the unscheduled interview can also come into play. Because different people are going to think different things, and it is our job to make sure people understand where those differences are.
Well, and asking these kinds of unscheduled questions I would in some ways, I think of them as statement busters. I hate statements. I hate prepared statements because they are things that are carefully crafted behind the scenes where you can ask no follow-up questions. You don't really
there's no context. Sometimes.
There's also, we
and
don't even know
suck.
Who's saying.
They usually
they say nothing. Yeah. Right. There's a lot of flowery language that doesn't really tell you much. And it's usually crafted by a group and therefore is on behalf of an institution or an organization. There's not an individual to hold accountable for those words. That's why these kinds of things are important. I want to step back for a minute, though, because you said something. You talked about how you kind of hate doing them, right?
Yeah.
And I've been doing this now in Milwaukee alone for 20 years. And I was in Kansas City before this and Des Moines before that. So I've had a lot of experience doing this. But when I first came to Fox 6 News, I was not good. This was not a natural technique that I was good at or was comfortable with. Like you, I prefer the agreed upon sit down. Let's talk about this.
I do think that's kind of a misconception. I think sometimes with people where they're like, oh, they're investigative reporters. They love to do this and they love to beat down doors and shove a mic in their face.
I will tell you. So there's a little of both here. And here's the thing. At the time when I first came here, I got so worked up and nervous. Mm-hmm. I would just about break out. I would be, you know, red in the face and nervous. And my heart rate would be elevated if I had to go and do one of these because there's this moment of, well, confrontation. They don't want to be talked to. They don't want to ask these questions.
Right?
Like, it's very unnatural.
Like
it's very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And I wasn't very good at it. But I've been here a little more than a year, and I got my first annual review at Fox 6 News, which I have right here.
Of course you do.
And so
spill the tea.
I'm going to read to you I was told. So we'll go past the strengths. We'll read the development needs and plans.
Wow, this review is a lot shorter than the ones I write.
Yeah, it is. This is October of 2005. Brian needs to keep ramping up his efforts at using compelling storytelling techniques such as confrontations. As an investigative reporter, he needs to be seen as strong enough to demand answers and hold people accountable. So I'm a young reporter and I get this review and they're saying, you need to confront more people. And I took that on and said, I've got to get comfortable with this. I've got to seek it out. And so for a while, there were some stories where I certainly made the call in advance, offering an interview, because you have to do that. That's the only fair thing to do. But I was secretly hoping they'd say no so that I had the chance to go do this.
Are you sure you want to sit down for an interview?
Yeah. And there's a problem with that. That's the wrong approach. And I don't mean to disparage the person who wrote this review. Their idea behind it is we want the image of our investigative team to be tough, to be an accountability unit. We want people to see that you're strong and you're pushing for answers. And I fully support that. But the idea of saying we need you to ramp up your confrontations means confrontation is the goal. And that should never be the goal. That is, as we said earlier, a last resort. It's a last resort when the sit-down interview doesn't happen with the person we have questions for that we need answers to, and we're not satisfied with a sanitized, prepared statement. Mm-hmm. So,
which, by the way, I understand the statement in the context of daily reporting, right? When you're doing a daily report, you have a few hours to get your stuff together. Someone may not be available, but they can write something up that might share their perspective. Mm-hmm. Fine.
There can be great value in statements, yes, right.
The stuff we're doing and the reason we feel so strongly about statements for the work we do is because it's long form. It's we often have discussions about what's a fair deadline to give this person in case someone's out, in case. So when someone says no for something like that, it is rarely because it's a scheduling problem. It's because they don't want to talk.
Well, and half the time you guys reach out so far in advance where you're like, my deadline for this sit-down interview would be X date. And it's like 2 weeks down the road.
At least.
It's not like they have.
This just happened recently with Milwaukee police when I did the Flock surveillance stories, the Flock cameras. I reached out and asked for an interview, and they responded that they didn't have time to do the interview. And I replied that I hadn't given them a deadline. So I gave them a deadline that was way far out. Mm-hmm. And they still said they weren't going to do the interview. That's another one of those examples, by the way, of where pushing for this ended up and doing one of these unscheduled interviews too, in fact, resulted in really important information and a sit-down interview. I attempted to talk to when they wouldn't do an interview, when they declined and multiple requests for an interview. I attempted to speak to a public relations person for the police department in our own parking lot, which he then walked away from, which prompted discussions with higher ups in the department who then, in fact, I'd made one more attempt. They said I should have been talking to someone in higher authority than the public information officer. So I tried to talk to the chief.
Thank you.
Chief, can I have just a moment?
I understand you have been trying to ambush a lot of people.
No. I've been trying to sit down and do an interview.
And then eventually they scheduled a sit-down interview. Mm-hmm. And in that sit-down interview, we got really good information about the department's position and perspective on why they have these cameras, why they didn't want people to know where they were.
I can assure the community that we're not actively using this technology to spy on people or track them.
But in the end, they actually gave us the locations of all of these cameras, which was pertinent to the story we were doing. Mm-hmm. So in the end, what we did got results for our viewers. And I think we see that over and over in these
situations. And we still have to show the process, because if we are going to push others to be transparent, we ourselves have to be transparent. So you could have just used the sit-down interview and said, we talked to MPD about this. Here's what they said. That would not have been transparent.
It also gives, it then demonstrates almost an equal amount of credit to that department, to another who agreed immediately to sit down and be transparent, which is not accurate fair to another department that said right away, sure, we'd be glad to share these answers with you. So I do think you're right. It's important to show that process for a couple of reasons.
There was one time in my career when I did an unscheduled interview without reaching out first. And that was when I worked at my last station. There was video from a nursing home, and I had done a lot of work around nursing home conditions. And there was video that an employee had taken of what appeared to be cockroaches in a nursing home kitchen. It was real gross. And there were all these other problems that have been popping up on these inspections. So I did not call that nursing home. I wanted to show up and see what the conditions were.
So they didn't have time to clean up. And
the discussion in our newsroom and with our news director, because we had a big discussion about this, because that's a big deal to show up without reaching out first. And we ultimately decided that there was value in that. And eventually, after some back and forth, they did bring us inside and we saw it was the same kitchen and we saw the conditions that kitchen was in. There were no cockroaches there that day. But there are exceptions, but I think people should know that in those off cases where we do that, it's after a lengthy amount of discussion and going through the pros and cons and looking at, okay, what are the ethics of this situation? and what is going to be fair, not only to the other person, but what is going to best serve the viewer.
So we've talked a lot about what we do prior to doing one of these unscheduled interviews. How we actually pulled them off is another whole conversation. And we're going to talk about that when we come right back. So we've announced we want to do an interview. That interview's been declined. We've tried multiple ways to get someone to agree to sit down, and now we're going to do this unscheduled interview. You mentioned earlier a school board meeting. Those are a lot easier because you have a meeting, a time and a place where you know the person you're looking for is going to be in a public spot where cameras are welcome, typically. And I know that was a little trickier because you had the pandemic situation and the building being closed to the public, but typically we can show up with a camera and we can walk right up to someone and ask questions. In a lot of situations, it's not that simple, especially when it's a private citizen or it's a public official who doesn't speak at a lot of public meetings and is sort of in an office that is beyond our reach. So when we get to the point of actually doing these, there can be a lot of steps. There's actually an episode of Open Record. If you go all the way back to the early days of Open Record, we did one. If you look for it, it's called The Art of Surveillance. And we talked about doing surveillance to either get video or in some cases, that's one of the techniques to getting these unscheduled interviews is you actually have to essentially do a stakeout. Yeah. You've got to wait for someone to come out of an office building or their home. And then there are all sorts of techniques as to how do you time that out in a way that you can maximize the number of questions you'll be able to ask before they disappear out of sight, drive away or go into their house or their office. And that's kind of what you were talking about as you were sitting outside the school board meeting, right? You had to sit there and wait for the moment that he came out.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about waiting it out, but I do think that that is crucial. And in part, it's also, it sounds weird when you say staking it out is respect for the other person, but you want to go through every possible length you can go through to see if this person will talk. And that's part of this process, too. So I mean, the reason we invest that time in the stakeout and the reason we stick around for the 3-hour board meeting with no bathroom break at 9 months pregnant is because not just we're waiting for our chance to pounce, but, hey, maybe they thought about it and they changed their mind. And that's happened to me before. So showing up and actually it was for that learning loss series about the pandemic. Originally, we had a confrontation with the superintendent for, I believe it was Oak Creek Franklin. And he sat in the board meeting and you could tell he was thinking about it. We made awkward eye contact a couple times. In that case, I was in the actual meeting. And at the end, he was like, you know what? I'm going to talk to you. And we had a great conversation. That's the low-key stakeout. I mean, we've certainly had things where we had to sit in the car and wait for this person to come out and where do they usually go here? You're also thinking about, okay, how can I approach this person in a public space? How can I do it safely?
Well, and you're with the photographer. It's not just you.
Right.
And so you have to, it's almost like a dance that you have to do ahead of time. Like, hey, here's what I'm going to do when they walk out the door. I'm going to do this.
Right.
Can you do this?
If we really get into the technical aspects of it, sometimes it's, you're really saying, okay, you have the camera in your lap. You're going to open that door. I'm going to go around this way.
It's very coordinated.
And you need to stay sort of at a similar distance to each other. Well, I want you to get me in the shot, but I want you to be close enough so that we're seeing that. I mean, there's a lot of that discussion. He's going to walk from that door to this car. At what point? And this is, it goes this far.
Yeah.
I wait until he's 6 seconds out of the door because it's about a 20-second walk to the car. If I go too soon, he goes right back in the door. We get to ask no questions.
Right.
If I wait too long, he jumps in the car. Yeah. We get to ask no questions. If I intercept him maybe about 50% of the way, we get a chance to spout out a couple of questions.
Get off this. You're on private property.
I just want to know why you're fighting so hard to keep us from getting a public record.
You're just a piece of shit, and you know it.
Bill, call the cops on this guy, will you?
It does go that far that you're doing this kind of calculation, but in the end, the purpose is I want to get out as many questions as I can in the hopes they will answer them. And it's happened time and time again where that has worked.
And how did John end up winning? How did John and his friends all end up winning the vacations that were supposed to raise money for veterans? Why don't you explain to me what happened?
Please get off my porch now.
Where I have confronted people in a situation where they have made it clear they don't want to talk. I have questions. I time it out right. And then by getting to ask enough questions, they will sometimes stop and do the interview right there.
What you're doing right now is a witch hunt based on disinformation from somebody who is the actual thief here. He ripped us off from day one, Brian. That's what you don't understand. From day one. You're a great journalist. I know you've dug up everything that you can.
Yeah.
And I've had it happen time and time again. One of the examples I think of that was actually one of my favorite all-time results, and I'll have to look this up. Maybe Dave can insert some of this in the podcast. There was a young man in Grafton who, I say young man, young adult, who was caught upskirting at the grocery store, and he was criminally charged. I wouldn't expect someone like that to want to talk about that experience. So, of course, he declined any request for an interview. I ended up going and talking to him, and when we were there with the camera and he sees the moment, he decides after that sort of moment where I approach him that he wants to talk. He invites us into his home. We sit down and we have a whole conversation where he confesses to what he's done. And he says it's against his Christian beliefs and he feels terrible. And that led to an actual scheduled sit-down interview. And when in the scheduled sit-down interview, we asked, well, then why are you fighting this? Why aren't you pleading guilty? And he had a legal defense that was wild. The legal defense had to do with, without getting too graphic, but this was what we had to talk about on the news. This was actually testified to in court. The legal defense was whether or not it constituted nudity because the person he was getting the upskirt pictures of was wearing underwear. What amount of coverage did the underwear give? And I asked him, I said, that doesn't sound, why are you arguing that defense? And he said, that's not my strategy. That's my lawyer's strategy. It's a great soundbite. He's admitted to the whole thing. And that wouldn't have happened if we hadn't gone and tried to talk to him.
Right. And I think that goes to a couple important points. One is the way you ask the questions really matters. And sometimes, and it depends on what you're trying to show, right? If it's clear the person's not going to answer questions, then sometimes your questions are trying to get at something or show something. I worked with a reporter once who there was a public official who was accused of, he was like smoking pot on the job and accused of stealing as well. And so she asked, it was like one of those walk, like a perp walk kind of situations where she's there and she shouted out, you know, were you getting high on the job? And he was so offended at the thought that someone would think he was smoking. And I'll need to check to make sure this is correct. But he was so offended at the idea that someone would think he was smoking that he was like, no, I just stole the money. Like, you know, it's like sometimes you don't know what's going to be important to someone. So I think the way you ask the questions is crucial. I also think we do need to point out that in these situations, a lot of the investigative reporters, especially investigative reporters in television, are white men. And it's different being in those situations when you're female from being conscientious of your safety or also how you're coming across. Am I too aggressive here? You sometimes tend to soften yourself. And then it's a whole extra layer for women of color. So I do think we need to acknowledge that different people, depending on what's going on in the environment around you, are going to have different levels of comfort and different things they're thinking about when asking your questions, how you ask the questions, how much can I piss this person off? My calculation as a white woman is going to be very different than a black male reporter or a black female reporter. So I do think that's something we need to acknowledge.
Well, I think safety is certainly an issue that I want to talk about. And actually, we're going to do that when we come right back. So I've been doing these, you know, unscheduled interviews for so long. And we talked earlier about how I wasn't comfortable in the beginning. And I grew more comfortable with it the more I did it. And I'll be honest, there's an adrenaline rush with the moment. Someone has been dodging you, someone you have important questions for. You've put a lot of time investment into finding them, into trying to see if you can get that moment to get them on camera. You get them. Maybe they answer some of your questions and give you what is a great element for your story that takes that story to the next level. And I have had times when that has happened where afterwards I have literally gotten into the car and pumped my fists like it's there. It is like a sports moment.
Yeah.
Like you got it. There you go. That was great.
Do you ever get in the car and go, what just happened?
Well,
like,
so
Gary with the gun.
Yeah. Well, and I'm going to talk, but I'll take it all the way back to one of the most memorable confrontation interviews, unscheduled interviews I ever had was with a guy who was a career criminal. We ended up finding out he had dozens and dozens and dozens of criminal charges and convictions against him. And he and his father were running a moving business. So they were taking people's personal belongings, everything they owned, and then holding them hostage and saying, nope, you've got to pay us way more than we originally quoted you. And so I went to his parents' front porch in Muskego, knocked on the door. He came to the door.
Jan Teasling, Franklin, do you remember her?
No.
You don't remember her?
No, we didn't move her. This is Discount Auto Sales.
What about Best Way Movers?
Yeah, that was my parents. The only move job I know about is the one where the lady gave us a bad check, and I have the bad check. And we have the rest of her stuff. And when she gives us the rest of her money, when she covers the check that she gave us the bad check, she can have her stuff.
I remember going into it knowing this is a dangerous guy. But I was so jazzed about getting the moment. It was very early on that I was with a photographer who'd never done an unscheduled interview before. Miles Cooksey. Miles is watching. Miles, I apologize. I told him going in, I said, look, if this guy takes a swing at me, and I meant a punch, this guy takes a swing at me, you roll, you don't stop. And I thought, this is the kind of guy where this could happen. He ended up yelling in my face. And it's a saying that became, you know, a lot of my coworkers have sort of repeated over and over the years. Get off my property.
Get off my property.
He says it right in my face. You can see the spittle come out of his mouth when he says it. And he does. It's very aggressive. He opens the door and gets in my face. And he says this. We backed away to the street, and as you said earlier, sometimes people will decide after the fact, actually, I want to talk. And I said, let's just wait out here, because maybe he'll want to come out. I think this guy has more to say. We waited out by the street. He came out of the house, and he said, I think he yelled something like, if you ever get in my face again, I'm going to bust you in the mouth. And then he got in his car, and he drove away, and they flipped us the bird as they drove off. And got back in the car, and Miles sat down, and I said, was awesome. And Miles
was horrified.
Shaking,
horrified.
Looked at me and he said, you are a different cat, dude. And I remember thinking, oh, you weren't so into that. He's like, I don't ever want to do that again. And we got back to the station and I mean, Miles did a great job. He got some great shots that really were memorable for that story. And we ended up doing a number of stories with that same person. By the way, I've done at least 3 unscheduled interviews with that same career criminal. And one of them became almost infamous because it was used in a Fox 6 investigators promo. The one where we're walking down the hallway of the courthouse and he gives me a bump. And I'm
hip check.
I said, did you just hip check me, Dan? And that was played over and over and over again. It is why my Instagram name is Hip Check MKE, because of that promo that ran for
just
about
lean into it.
3 years. The point behind that is I was all worked up and excited. I never considered the danger I might be putting myself in. And over the years, I've had more and more of these confrontations or unscheduled interviews or situations with people who are dangerous criminals or people who have been accused of very dangerous things. And you mentioned Gary with the gun. We've talked about that on this podcast. This was a situation where I was interviewing someone. He didn't have a criminal record in terms of a violent record, but there were questions about whether or not he was involved in the death of one of his patients when he was a therapist. And he had violated professional boundaries with 3 different clients. We went to go talk to him after he agreed to an interview and then backed out. So we knew where he was. We went there. And when he came out and I approached him, he told us to go away.
I'd like to talk to you about the visions you had of Adam Mills' dead body.
You're on private property. I'll have you arrested.
Similarly to the other one, I said, I think this guy wants to say more. We went out to the street. We got off his property. And moments later, he came out. And that's when he comes out with the gun in his hand.
Is that a gun in your hand, Gary?
That reaction said a lot about this person's, his anger issues that were an element of the story.
Get out of here now.
I have video of it. Would you like me to call the
property? Get off here.
Would you like me to call the police about that gun?
Never was determined whether he was involved in the disappearance of this person. But if you're a viewer and you're trying to decide, How do I feel about this person? Do I trust them? What do I think? Do I think they could have been involved? When you add it to the other documents we had, the text exchanges.
The gun might factor.
The gun in his
that.
Hand. I mean, he's on his own property, but he brought it out in a threatening manner.
Yeah.
What does that say about his potential for losing his cool, mm-hmm. for committing some kind of violence? That's, I think that speaks volumes to a viewer, and that's why those things are sometimes so important. But again, I left that, and Kale, who's here, was the photographer on that story.
Oh, baby Kale.
Kale, I know, was probably not wild about what had just happened.
Does My Kale wife. Have a mic? Can Kale weigh in on this?
Yeah.
I was not wild about what's happened, but in the moment, I'm just thinking, okay, let's get out of here. And I'm not sure if you're comfortable with me telling what happened
you
at
can,
that time.
You could be 100% honest. I'm fully
but
transparent.
You can
unschedule the interview.
We were in the car. He walks out with the gun in his hand. Brian was in the driver's seat. I was in the passenger seat shooting video. And Brian gets out of the car. I wasn't excited about that either. Not pictured yeah. on camera. Brian had the microphone upside down.
I did. The stress of that moment. I did. I was holding it because I had it in my lap. I got out of the car and just picked it up.
But you can't blame him because you want that, but also he's not looking at what's going on.
My 4-year-old would say that at that moment, getting out of the car was a red choice.
Yeah.
It was a red choice, Brian.
Incidentally, it also tells me that I should probably not get out my own gun in any situations, because if I don't have the gun the right way, that could be a real problem. But I just had a microphone. What I remember is we stayed on the scene and the sheriff's department was called, and they came out and they looked at our video and they talked to us. So we did stay around for a while, but that was a terrifying moment in hindsight. In the moment, my adrenaline was high. Afterwards, my wife, my mother-in-law, my mom, my boss, they all said,
had some things to say.
No. Great job on the story,
but
don't do that again.
Yeah.
You know, you see a gun, get out of there.
Yeah.
Don't get out of the car and yell at the
guy. Well, and this kind of thing also requires a really thorough knowledge of knowing where you're allowed to be and when you need to leave. Legally, but in this case, maybe also from a judgment standpoint.
I realize we're running short on time. We could talk about this all day, but I just want to add one more thing about the danger. And that is, I was just interviewing Alderman Michael Murphy, who's outgoing Milwaukee alderman. And as I was leaving his office just the other day, he stopped me and he said, "Hey, I see some of these people you're approaching, and I just want to tell you, be careful. There are people out there who will do you harm." And I think that's the thing that we have to keep in mind is, while this is a technique we use for stories, some of the people we talk to are in fact dangerous. And as time has gone on, things have changed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the fear that someone, it's not just that someone might take a swing at me or you.
Right.
The fear is they might do something much more violent. And that's certainly something we are cognizant of. It is a real danger in our profession. So safety is important.
Well, and it's why we don't make those decisions lightly.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right, we're going to take a break. When we do, we are going to come back and go off the record. And it's time for us to go off the record. This is the part of the podcast where we get a little more casual, have a little fun by answering a question that Sarah has prepared for us.
Hi.
What do you have?
What do you consider to be an unacceptable number of tabs to have open on your browser?
3.
Okay,
fine, 4.
Go.
I'll go 4. Look at my browser.
I will have the number of tabs open that the memory can handle.
Same.
Gosh. No. I mean,
have you seen? You've seen my browser.
Yes, it's a lot.
It stresses
when
you out.
When I can't read what it says and all it is tap, 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 tap. That's too much.
You know what the worst
so
is?
What
happens when you have multiple versions of the browser open and each one has
absolutely
multiple tabs?
Not.
Yeah. May or may not.
I counted yesterday because Dave, editor Dave, was the one that messaged me. He goes, "This would be a good question." So I looked and I had 10 at the time. And that's about my max. Like, that's where I need to go. Do I need any of these anymore? And I start closing them out.
Okay, I go back and say 3 on one screen. Because on mine, I've got 3 on the left and 3 on the right.
Oh, no, I can't do that. They all have to be on one side.
But this problem is I have the schedules up on one side,
okay,
and I have to reference stuff on the other side.
Constantly.
Do you leave them open for long, like if it's your home computer, for long periods of time, or do you close them down when you're done?
Close it down.
I leave them open forever.
No,
you and Denise.
Yeah.
I have five tabs.
I mean, Denise is great, so I'm happy to be okay, in the same
but
category.
My wife will have tabs for shopping and other things that she will leave open for like weeks at a time. They're still there. Oh. And then I come in and do something and accidentally out of habit X out and I've closed them all. And
how
I'm sure she's
dare
like,
you.
Yeah,
I'm
I know.
For you.
Yeah.
I've got five tabs that are open all the time. Schedules, the, you know, our main landing page and my to-do list.
Okay.
All right. Well, we didn't have a very long off the record because we talked about a lot of other stuff this week, but I think we're going to wrap things up for good when we come right back. Well, we do have a schedule to keep, so we're going to wrap things up here. If you have a topic you would like us to discuss on Open Record or an issue you think we should investigate for Fox 6 News, send us an email to fox6investigators@fox.com. As always, thank you to the people who make this podcast possible, Amanda, Sarah, to our editor, Dave Machuda, and our chief photographer, manning the video switcher, Kale Zimney. With that, I'm Brian Polson. We'll be back next week.